proves you have staying power," she said coyly. He reached for her left breast, smiling. "No, don't," she moved out of the way. "Augustine's still feeding. You'll upset him." He lay back, disgruntled. "Joshua, how long are you staying this time?"
"A couple of weeks. I need to get a contract with Roland Frampton sorted out. Distribution, not a charter. We're going for a Norfolk run, Ione. We raised a lot of capital on some of our contracts. Put that together with what I have left over from scavenging, and we'll have enough for a cargo of Norfolk tears. Imagine that! A hold full of the stuff."
"Really? That's wonderful, Joshua."
"Yeah, if I can swing it. Distribution isn't the problem. Acquisition is. I've been talking to some of the other captains. Those Norfolk Rose Yard Association merchants are tough nuts to crack. They won't allow a futures market, which is pretty smart of them, actually. It would be dominated by off-world finance houses. You have to show up with a ship and the cash, and even then it's not a certainty you'll get any bottles. You need a pretty reliable contact in the trade."
"But you've never been there. You don't have any contacts."
"I know. First-time captains need a cargo to sell, a part exchange deal. You've got to have something the merchants can't do without. That way you can get a foot in the door."
"What sort of cargo?"
"Ah, now, that's the real problem. Norfolk is constitutionally a pastoral world. There's hardly any high technology they'll allow you to import. Most captains take cordon bleu food, or works of antique art, fancy fabrics, stuff like that." Ione put Augustine down carefully on the other side of the silk pillows and rolled onto her side facing him.
"But you've got something else, haven't you?
I know that tone, Joshua Calvert. You're feeling smug." He smiled up at the ceiling.
"I was thinking about it. Something essential and new, but not synthetic. Something all those Stone Age towns and farms are going to want."
"Which is?"
"Wood."
"You're kidding." "Wood, as in timber?"
"Yeah."
"But they have wood on Norfolk. It's heavily forested."
"I know. That's the beauty of it. They use it for everything. I've studied some sensorized recordings of the place. They make their buildings with it, their bridges, their boats. Jesus, they even make carts out of it. Carpentry is a major industry there. But what I'm going to take them is a hardwood, and I mean really hard, like metal. They can use it in their furniture, or for their tool handles, their windmill cogs even. Anything that's used every day or rots or wears out. It's not high technology, yet it'll be a real cost-effective upgrade. That ought to get me in with the merchants."
"Hauling wood across interstellar space?" She shook her head in amazement.
"Only Joshua could come up with an idea so wonderfully crazy."
"Yep. Lady Mac should be able to carry almost 1,000 tons if we really pack the stuff in."
"What sort of wood?"
"I checked in a botanical reference library file when I was in the New California system. The hardest known wood in the Confederation is mayope. It comes from a new colony planet called Lalonde." Inone's flyer was a flattened egg shape, 11 meters long, with a fuselage that gleamed like purple chrome. It was built by the Brasov Dynamics Company on Kulu, who had been heavily involved with the Kulu Corporation, owned by the Crown, in pioneering the ion field technology which had sent panic waves through the rest of the Confederation's astro-engineering companies. Space planes were on their way out, and Kulu was using its technological prowess to devastating political effect, granting preferential license production to the companies of allied star systems. Standard iron thrusters lifted it out of Inone's little hangar and pushed it into an elliptical orbit that grazed Atlantis's upper atmosphere. When the first wisps of molecular fog began to thicken outside the fuselage, Oxley activated the coherent magnetic field. The flyer was immediately surrounded by a bubble of golden haze, moderating the flow of gas streaking around the fuselage. Oxley used the flux lines to grab at the mesosphere, breaking the flyer's velocity, and they dropped in a steep curve towards the ocean far below. Syrinx settled back in her deeply cushioned seat in the cabin, along with Reuben, Tula, and the newest member of the crew, Serena, a crew toroid generalist who had replaced Chi. All of them were gazing keenly out of the single curving transparency around the front of the cabin.